Welcome back to Bed Talks. We are so excited to be back with another show, and we are really super excited about our guests. The thing I love the most about social media is just like connecting with people you would never meet in real life, because you could just be connected to anyone in any part of the world, and learning about their passion and having them share their passion with us. So today we are really excited to have Brian Harris with us. Welcome to the show.
Give it up.
Thank you so much. What a pleasure it is.
So Brian, I don't think I can do you justice. I'm going to try a little bit, but I'm going to need you to help me. You're an educator. You're a minister. You're an author. The reason I think you are so important to the world and the community, and why I myself and Kay like talking to people like you, is because you are helping to shape our community, the young minds within our community. So can you tell us more, the audience more, about who you are and why this became your passion, you know, helping cultivate youth?
Sure. So hello, everybody. I'm Brian Keith Harris II, school leader at a kindergarten through fifth grade all-boys school in Washington, D.C. Have been in education for 16 years, 7 years as an elementary school teacher, and then 9 years as a school administrator, having different roles at different schools. I'm the founder and artistic director of Sons of Freedom Dance Institute, an organization that nurtures character development, increases social awareness, and builds spiritual formation for Black and brown boys through classical and contemporary forms of dance and movement. The founder of Cultivating Young Kings, an organization that teaches or works with teachers, school leaders, and school districts that engage directly with Black and brown boys and children in underserved communities, as well as the author of two books, Freedom's Design, 20 Days of Empowering Black Kings, and the children's book, I Am My History. When I think about my experiences or my educational trajectory, I immediately go to a place in my childhood. When I was a child, I loved three things, or wanted to become three things. And that was a preacher, a teacher, and a dancer. I was known to do my preaching and teaching simultaneously. And so my parents bought me a chalkboard that I remember very well. And I would set up teddy bears on the floor in like a perfect line. And I would teach them different concepts, math concepts. I would teach them how to read letters, sounds, all of those pieces. And then I would quickly change into my preaching attire. So I had like this blue sheet that my grandmother made, and I would put that on. And then my classroom became the sanctuary. And so I would then begin to preach. And it's funny because my grandmother had like those old fashioned tape recorders. And when we would go to church, she would record the preacher. And I would listen to those recordings and mimic the preacher. And so when I think of like my earliest love for teaching and preaching, it takes me to that place. And I think that has just followed me throughout my entire life. I come from a family of preachers. I come from a family of teachers and educators and people who have devoted their time and their energy and their talents and their gifts to young people. And I think that is something that was instilled in me. And I think it's something that has followed me and is following me as I'm currently doing this work with young people.
Well, that's amazing. Kay had to give you some applause.
For those of you who are actually listening or will listen to this podcast, I actually had the bear, the love bear, as Brian was really just spitting verbiage about how he would set up stuffed animals and preach to the audience. Let me tell you something. It takes a real man, and I don't care. People say, what do you mean? What's a real man? You know, people will be blowing up the post. A real man is a real man who will actually talk about setting up stuffed animals because of his vision that was bigger than what he was anticipating at that moment. So that's big, Brian, and that's why I had to give that up to you, man.
You know, and just, you know, piggybacking a little bit off of what you said, this is such challenging times for young people just because of so many different reasons. They have different types of peer pressure, different pressure attached to social media, there's with statistics out that younger people are having suicide ideation thoughts younger at younger ages than ever before. So like from what you're, you know, doing, it is really important because you literally could be saving the life of someone who may have thought that they didn't have hope or they didn't have opportunity. So that's very commendable. What are some of the other challenges that you see with kids, and how do you kind of help these kids? You know, if there's parents out there listening to this podcast, how do you help them overcome them?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. I think some of the challenges that our children are facing is not being able to oftentimes have a space or a platform to express their authentic feelings and thoughts about what is happening with them, what's happening in their community, and what's happening in the country and even the world. I think that we as educators and even as parents don't always give our children that space to just share, to unapologetically share. And as a result of that, I think our children walk through life not able to handle their emotions, not able to understand the truth of who they are. And so one of the things that I would share with educators and with families or parents is to make sure that you are pushing past your own level of insecurity, perhaps, or even your own level of parenthood, to give your children an opportunity to express themselves and to share their thoughts and their feelings. Because when we provide an opportunity for our children to express themselves and share those thoughts and feelings and what they're feeling in the moment, we give them power. We allow them to have those positive emotional regulation tools. But then we also, in a real sense, give them an opportunity to release the stress and the trauma. And that's another thing that I think is important, that parents don't oftentimes realize the same stressors that you experience as an adult, the children are experiencing that as well. And the danger is that the children are experiencing that without the tools to express it in a positive or productive way. And so many of our children are grappling with trauma, grappling with stressors, and not having the platform nor the tools to properly express that trauma and stress. And as a result, they are growing up half of who they are supposed to be. And so my advice to parents is give your children an opportunity to name the stress or name the negative experiences or thoughts or feelings that they're having so that you can therefore become a conduit to their healing. And I think that's one of the things that is important for us to understand. That's a big challenge. And I do think that there are educators all over the country and perhaps even parents at this time, during this time of our pandemic, who are beginning to listen to their children and beginning to hear what it is that their children are experiencing and saying, and we need to do more of that. So that's one of those challenges that I think are facing our children. And then I also think that another challenge that's facing our children is them not knowing, particularly Black and brown children, them not knowing the truth of their history and their cultural legacy. And I think that that is something that not only do educators have a responsibility and a role to make sure that they are teaching the truth and the entirety of history and culture, but I also think that it's important for parents to do the same. Because our children need to understand their history and culture, not just so that they are receiving information or not so that you're just receiving knowledge, but also so that they have an opportunity to mend their soul and awaken their spirit. That gets into a whole long conversation, but you know, my idea of soul and spirit is this. At the seat of your soul, the seat of all of our souls, is our heritage, our culture, our history. And at the seat of our spirit is our dreams, our aspirations, the things that wake us up in the morning. And I think many of us are suffering, our children specifically, are suffering from a broken soul and a dead spirit. And the broken soul because we have been disconnected from our history and our culture. And so when parents and educators are spending the time to share the entirety of history and culture with their children, it has a way of mending the soul, awakening the spirit, so that our children can then soar to the place that they're supposed to be.
What platforms do you actually find in the school system that can cater to these issues that our young people face? Now, I know you mentioned about, you know, parenting, okay, on the home front. But what platforms can be implemented in the school system to still address these issues? Because let's be real here, there are some parents who, unfortunately, you know, they're working all the time. They really can't give the proper attention to the, you know, to little Johnny, to little Sarah. So what would be some things that the school system, since you are a product of the school system, as myself as well, what could be some things that could be implemented in the school system to help address these things you spoke on?
Yeah, I think that providing a platform for children to share their thoughts and feelings is something that should be ingrained in daily living. And I don't believe that there is one such program that does it, but I believe that it can live in daily instruction. And so for educators, for school leaders who are trying to find ways and opportunities to allow children this space and this platform, have to go look at their daily schedule. What is in their daily schedule, and finding time and being intentional about the time given to children to do this work. So a very practical example, at the school in which I work, we have embedded mindfulness exercises and practices into the daily instruction. And this is a time that we set aside every single day that gives our boys an opportunity to talk about what they're experiencing, what they're feeling, and how to handle what they're experiencing and what they're feeling. And so what we did was we took this idea of, you know, our boys need an opportunity to share, and we embedded it into our daily instruction. So that's one platform, embedding it into your daily class instruction. I think another platform is embedding this into the reading that children have. So for parents who say, I don't have a lot of time to do these pieces, the reality is that what I'm speaking about is not a program. It's not something that you're doing, you know, in addition to your child learning. This is a part of your child's development and learning, that part being them having the proper emotional regulation tools to handle life. And so for parents who are saying, what platforms do I use? You just live. And you live giving your children an opportunity to share. You live giving your children books that would share their history and their culture. You live while giving your children an opportunity to understand the dynamic between relationships. And so I think that when we change our mindset and change our perspective, we see that this is greater than a platform and more of a way of being. So I think that's kind of what my mind says when, you know, when hearing, like, what are the platforms that we can utilize to make sure that our children are learning.
And I want to go back to something you said that was pretty powerful. And I was actually in another virtual workshop, and we talked about this similar topic. You know, as parents, and I'm guilty of this, my parents have been guilty of this, we have this natural inclination to try to solve our kids' problems. So when they come to us and they tell us, I'm going through this particular thing, we immediately chime in with like how we would handle it. And that's our experience, because we have experience, and that is valuable. But sometimes it's just taking a step back and having your child say, tell me more.
That's right.
Tell me more how you feel. Tell me why you're feeling this way. Because what you're doing is you're empowering them, just like you said, to think through or develop critical thinking skills, because they are going to feel anxious. They are going to feel sad. They are going to feel frustration. They are going to feel, you know, anger. So you have to teach them, like you said, how to regulate these emotions, because you're not going to always be there to help them regulate those emotions. And I think that's the difference of a kid that learns how to channel their energy, even coming up in a really tough environment. I think LeBron James is such a good example for so many reasons.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think, you know, he found a way to channel a lot of his frustration with maybe his situation, getting out of his situation, not having a dad, through getting mentors, through sports, through reaching back and pulling it through the community to do things for the community. So like it's a whole, if people probably don't realize, it's probably a self-healing journey there for him as well. So it's really teaching our kids to kind of just take these feelings and regulate them in a different way that helps them. And so I was curious, I saw that you have some books out there. I know you mentioned them earlier in the interview, but tell us a little bit about these books and how you feel like these have helped the kids as well that you tend to work with.
Mm-hmm. The first book, Freedom's Design, 20 Days of Empowering Black Kings, is a book of poetry. It's 20 poems that all center around history and culture. and that provide boys an opportunity to share their thoughts every single day through a series of questions and activities. The way that I've seen Freedom's design live, be lived out among boys specifically, since it was written with the intention of focusing on boys, is I've seen boys begin to open up and feel comfortable enough to say things like, "So I'm confused because the things that happened to Emmett Till are currently happening today. And why is there no change?" You know, there's a poem in the book called Echoes from Emmett. And hearing some of the young men say things like that is so empowering and inspiring, because they are beginning to make connections. And as a result of them making connections, they then say things like, "Well, I'm going to do something about it." You know, and so my question, what are you going to do? You know, "I'm going to write a letter to my councilman," or "I'm going to create a program at my school that's going to talk about, you know, gun violence, or going to talk about police brutality." And so I've been able to see boys take poetry that is in a book and translate it to their everyday life and the ways in which they can be leaders in their community. And it has been such a joy.
It's interesting because it sounds like you have them journaling too a little bit, right? In this book, is this
absolutely.
So they're journaling, absolutely. So they're learning how to express themselves, like in a rhetorical way, in a way, right? Writing.
That's right.
But also then they're taking it through their mind and channeling it, and then they're building this connection, you know, to their history and to, like, wait, why is this happening? Okay, and now how do I solve through it? So I'm stealing this from your friend Purvis. He talks about this. It's called Righteous Indignation. Like, it's the Rosa Parks thing where you take your frustration and you say, okay, how do I work to create this change that I want to see, as opposed to suppressing and repressing that anger, right?
Yeah, and it's really resilience, right? Mm-hmm. When we talk about what is resilience, it really is an opportunity to look at a problem, to see a problem, identify a problem, and then begin the work of solving the problem, right? And so they're able to, through that first book, see some of the problems, identify them, name them, and then begin to build the blocks on how it is that they're going to change those problems that they see. But not only that, because I don't want to talk about it from the lenses of kind of struggle and then kind of triumph, but it also creates joy. There are poems in there that affirm Black and brown boys, right? That give them that joy factor. We have a poem in there called "You Are a Black King," and that poem is actually being used at multiple schools who have mentoring programs and who kind of have like these rites of passage programs. And that's the poem that these boys say like at the end of their program. And I've been able to see the joy and excitement of boys when they are reciting some of these affirmational statements. And then my second book, I Am My History, has just been electrifying. I'm so overwhelmed by the amount of children that, one, want to learn more about their history as a result of reading the book, and then also feel so affirmed because they see themselves not in just the book, but in the ancestors that are depicted in the book. And so they're walking away like, "I'm gonna be courageous like Harriet Tubman," or "I'm gonna change the world like Rosa Parks," or "I'm gonna do things like Jackie Robinson did." And so that is just such a joy for them to see themselves reflected in books, and then for them to also see themselves in the ancestors that are in the book as well. So that's kind of how I've seen both the books live out in the lives of our children.
I have to say this. Okay.
Yes.
We were talking prior to going on air. You mentioned your dance program, your dance organization. We talk about these various outlets, such as journaling, which I think is amazing. I've been journaling for years, but I didn't know the concept of journaling as a child. Okay.
Yeah.
It allows you and affords you to not only speak to yourself, but to speak to yourself honestly when journaling. Okay.
Yes.
So now when you get outside of that particular realm of journaling, and now you enter into the art of dancing, where you can really physically, spiritually, emotionally express yourself. How are you able to make or provide a comfortable bridge for students who may be a little reserved, because we talked a little bit about this before going on air, into these open butterflies in the art of dance? You got to talk about that now, Brian.
Yeah. So this is great. This is great. So the first thing that is so powerful and has been powerful with Sons of Freedom, because we include journaling in the dance company. As a result of that, boys are beginning to again open up. But that journaling is a foundation for choreography. Because in Sons of Freedom, we are not just interested in how things look aesthetically, but we are also interested in the story that is being told. Dance is an embodied expression that gives our boys and children an opportunity to share what they're thinking and what they've written honestly in a way where they don't have to speak about it, right? And so I wrote about my anxiety, I wrote about my frustration, and now I am going to act that out in my body. But even if I don't feel like I can act that out in my body, I am now going to be the choreographer. And so someone else gets an opportunity to feel my frustration and feel my stress, which is what we do at Sons of Freedom. And so there have been so many boys who have said, I don't want to do this piece. I don't want to do this piece, but I'll choreograph this piece. And I'll tell someone else how to do this piece and how to act out this frustration. And so I think that it has really been powerful for boys who have come to the dance company and who have a lot of and dealing with a lot of stress and anxiety and trauma and fear and doubt and all of those things that would hinder them from blossoming. It's helped them to blossom. Right, and it's helped them to navigate through those feelings in an artistic and non-judgmental way. One of the things that we do also is, one of the first activities that we do after we've journaled is I will begin to ask a series of questions. And the boys don't answer the questions verbally. They answer the questions physically, but they're all together. And so, for example, one of the questions may be, you've had a family member to pass away. What are you feeling in your body? And they do these wonderful tableaus of movement. And it's so powerful to see. I remember specifically one young man obviously showed immense sorrow. There was another young man who was just smiling. And, you know, they do these poses for a few seconds and then we talk about it. Like, what was your movement about? Why did you express that movement? And I asked him, why were you smiling? I mean, did you not hear what the question was? And this is me even being ignorant, right? Like in my own questioning. And he said, I'm smiling because my family member is no longer in pain. Mm. And I just said, wow. You know, and so here it is, a young man who's able to communicate grief in a way where he's able to also see it as a blessing, right? And he's doing all of this without talking. And so that's the power of movement. That's how dance can really heal. And that's how dance has healed many of the boys who have been in Sons of Freedom.
And I think there's something else happening. I think you're helping people to develop empathy, you know, to understand what someone else is going through, to understand that they're not the only person that's dealing with this, to give them different coping mechanisms. There's power in that. You know, you have one person whose grief could be so... you know, just difficult, like just numbing and painful. But then you have someone else saying, hey, this is the other part of it. And that speaks to the grieving process, right? So I think there's so much value in what you're doing with these young men. And I'm sure that you feel very rewarded each day because you probably hear a different story or you hear from the parents or other educators, you know, just about how these, you know, you're helping to shape and change these children's life in such a positive way. And I like the history because one good side effect of COVID was people started reading more, and it was amazing. Like, I thought I knew a lot about history, you know, our history, Black history, but then as like COVID happened, it was like, I was like, oh, I didn't know that fact. It was like people were just like becoming really woke. I mean, like not just woke, but like woke on a level of, you know, really digging into deeper understandings, just like you're saying your kids are doing, to the connectivity of like, where did I come from? You know, what did I get through? And they were drawing power from that. And the other thing I think you're teaching the kids is community building. You know, let's work together. You know, we can do more together. And I'm sure they see the impact of that as you do the dancing. And Brian is being modest here. You might just think he's a regular dancer or something, but tell them about your dancing experience here. you know, you're classically trained. Let's get into that a little bit, because they may just think this is a little class where people come in and do some simple movements, but let's tell them about
it. So classically trained, been dancing since I was 10 years old, in every genre, ballet, jazz, tap, modern, West African dance. Danced through high school, through college, and then even as an adult, I've done multiple summer intensives with some professional dance companies around the country. And so, you know, my dance experience is vast. And I think that's why I've been able to kind of speak to all different types of young men who come to the company. Because some of our young men come to the company and have never danced in their lives, but they have a passion for it. And others come to the company and they have danced, right? And there's some young men whose parents say, listen, we're so grateful that we found you. He's been dancing, but he's been dancing by himself. There's no other, you know, boys in his dance class. So we just took him out of the dance class he was in. And so it's so amazing, too, to see these black and brown boys doing classical dance. One of the things that I love so much, one of our first performances, we were preparing to go on stage. And there were some people backstage, and this young lady, and God bless her, she didn't mean any harm. She said, oh my goodness, all these boys, this is so beautiful. Are you guys going to do hip hop? And I've trained my boys that whenever we're performing, if someone talks to you right before performance, do not say anything to them. Like, you need to be completely focused. And so they didn't. And they just smiled. And, you know, she probably said that it was dark and they had on backward hats. And then they walked on stage and the curtain opened and that classical ballet music started. Mm. And everybody was just, you could hear the sighs like, oh, you know, because they saw these black and brown boys with backward hats. They assumed that, you know, there was going to be a hip hop piece that was going to come out. And they heard that ballet music, that piano music, and they saw those boys doing that classical ballet piece. And so I think that's been, you know, the joy of my experiences. And then even my own experiences have been limited in that, you know, I knew early on that I really wanted to be a dance teacher and a dance educator, not dance professionally. And so I think because of that, I've been able to really focus on the things that dance education provides for children. Greater than just teaching performance or technique or skill. Mm-hmm. We focus on other things that dance, you know, that come out of dance education. And many of our boys are doing some of those things. Like, we have a young man who takes pictures of dancers. He was in the company. Like, he doesn't want to be a dancer, but he wants to take pictures of dancers. And then we also have another young man who came to me third grade, 8 years old, and said, are you my dance teacher? I said, I am. He said, great, because I want to go to college to dance. And he's a junior at the University of Las Vegas, mm-hmm. getting a degree in ballet performance. Wow. And so, you know.
Various forms of expression. And it's amazing because where one buck stops, the other buck picks up. You had a student that you actually mentioned that he didn't want to perform the dance, but he wanted to write the script as far as the choreographed piece. And I thought that was powerful because what that spoke to and what that said was, look, focus on what you're comfortable with, what you're good with, and then watch the next person that is comfortable with what they're doing based on what you scripted, and we can make this thing into one circle, period.
Putting all those components together.
And you know, Brian, I have to say this because as we hear you speak and talk, man, you have such enthusiasm with what you do. It resonates off of you. A thought came to mind. I heard a person say this once. They said, teaching affects eternity because you never know when the influence ends or stops.
That's it.
And so, brother, listening to you, you are affecting eternity because you don't even know when you're long gone, when we're all long gone, but we're talking about you right now. You will not know where it stops, thus meaning it's eternal. So keep spreading and sowing those seeds of eternity, my man, because that influence, you won't ever know when or if it stops.
I received that. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, and just, you know, I just think I love that you are allowing these children to lean into their authenticity. We were watching a gymnastics routine by some sisters out at UCLA.
Oh, my goodness. Janet Jackson.
And they did a Janet Jackson routine, and it was amazing. And I think back to, like, when I was younger, there was definitely a traditional way you did gymnastics. And what I'm seeing is people are getting more comfortable expressing and doing things in a way that feels comfortable to them. And when they lean into that, it is so powerful. And I could totally see the reaction when you were telling about your young men with their backwards hats, hat and they walked out, right. And people are like, oh, this is going to be a hip hop dance. And not to negate hip hop, but then when it's ballet, that just throws everything off. And I remember just like even going to see Elvin Ailey. You know, my parents took me at a young age to see Elvin Ailey, and I was so excited because I saw people that look like me that were expressing dance in such creative, artistic ways. And yes, I did. I've seen the Joffrey Ballet, no knocks to it, but it was just something about seeing people that look like you. And I think everyone feels this way. Seeing someone that mirrors you and looks like you doing something
on that stage.
On that stage, you know, that tells you, just like it's telling your kids, like, oh, I may not be a dancer, but I may be a choreographer. Mm-hmm. I might be a set designer. I might be someone that helps, you know, with costumes. Like, it starts opening up people's creativity, because sometimes they just don't know that those things are out there for them. So this has been so enjoyable to talk to you. We could talk to you for a long time because, like Kay said, the enthusiasm, the passion, we feel it from you. It's all over you. Mm-hmm. It's such a
And
great
you know, moment. If we feel that, imagine what the children, the are students, feeling. Because, you know, kids mm-hmm. don't lie. They draw to what they feel or they ignore from what they repel. It's no gray areas with that. So my man, again, if we're drawn to you and in this short span of time, we can only imagine the magnet that you've become, not only for your students, but for your community, your school, and so forth.
And the last thing I do want to make sure we touch on is the Cultivating Young Kings. I don't think we really talked about that program. I do want you to share with our listeners about that program, what it means, like, you know, why you decided to develop it. And the impact that you've seen. I mean, you shared a lot of the impact you've done with your other programs. You're a busy man, but I'm you know, also incredibly curious about that program as well.
Yep. So Cultivating Young Kings is what I like to call my new baby. It's a new program. I started Cultivating Young Kings really because I wanted educators to understand what boys, particularly elementary school boys, are facing every single day. Even more specifically, Black and brown boys in education who are experiencing trauma and, you know, stress on a regular basis. And I wanted them to be equipped with the necessary tools to not just educate, but also to help heal our boys who come to their classrooms every single day dealing with this. And so it was really birthed out of that desire. The first year of the program, we had a conference that about 85 people came to. And for me, that was huge because, again,
it's pretty good for the first conference, actually.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, we were able to provide all kinds of resources from a social worker sharing to a yoga teacher sharing and really talking about resilience and mindfulness and why movement is important, even to an English teacher talking about motivating boys to read and how to specifically do that. And so that kind of was the first year, and Cultivating Young Kings has kind of lived out in that way. So have had an opportunity to go to different schools, work with teachers, helping them to really incorporate some of these practices like mindfulness, motivation to read, you know, yoga, all of those kind of tools that really help boys to be successful and have successful outcomes academically, socially, and emotionally. And I think that Cultivating Young Kings in the future will continue to do the work of, you know, conferences and workshops, even thinking about bringing some young men to inspire other young men, which will be called Kings, Empowering Kings. And so we're continuing to build Cultivating Young Kings. And I'm so grateful for the opportunities that we've already had to go into schools, to work with teachers, and the overwhelming difference the sessions have been and how they've been lived out in classrooms and in the lives of children. So super excited about that. I'm super excited that we've been able to introduce the book, I Am My History, through the lenses of Cultivating Young Kings, and how we can add both mindfulness and the book together. So I created something called an ancestral mindfulness moment. And it's a way for us to, one, be present. It's another way for us to learn about our ancestors and our history. And so that's been a really cool thing that has happened through Cultivating Young Kings. And so, yeah, we're looking forward to, you know, continuing to move, continuing to write new books. I have two new book projects coming out just in this year, one in the summer, one in the fall. And so, yeah, we're just, you know, still moving.
Where can teachers and educators find you if they want to learn more about your program?
Absolutely. I can be found at my website, www.briankeithharris.com, and on all social media platforms, Brian Keith Harris.
Well, keep doing the work you're doing.
You have to.
Thank you.
And I'm sure these kids push you, like, they're like, you're not going anywhere, because it sounds like you have been embedded in their lives in such a positive way. I could just tell they look forward to working with you. I mean, we're feeling this energy from you, like Kay said. I'm sure the kids
Matter of fact,
really
I think I may have a busload, Brian. now, I'm going to be honest with you. They little baby, and, you know, they're going to come with some major issues, but I believe you can help crack those shells to find those jewels that lie within. So if you see a bus pull up to your school, you'll know it was from K.
I'm gonna say, oh Lord, that K didn't brought all these children. It's fine. I think I will forever be that. It's funny, one of my dance parents calls me Abraham. And I asked her, why do you call me Abraham? And she said, because you are the father of many sons.
Father of many sons.
Oh, wow. I love that.
Father of a nation, huh?
And you know, K is being modest here too. He has such a passion for helping young men too. And he yes. helps young men that have, you know, different challenges, similar to what you're talking about. So he is very good.
Just different spectrums.
Right.
You know, I may have to show up to one of your classes and take a few classical dance lessons, man.
Please. I would love to have you.
Everyone may think I'm LeBron James, though, so I don't know if that would be a distraction.
He's pretty tall. He's a little tall, yeah. He's like 6'5". But it could be interesting. I was trying to envision him ballet dancing. That would be real interesting.
Hey. You know, just show me.
But he has some moves, so I don't know. It's very possible.
Show me how to stand on my toes.
I think it would be very possible. You know, there's a wonderful company in New York, Complexions Contemporary Ballet Company, and almost all of the men in Complexions are like over 6 feet tall.
Mm.
And it's such a beautiful thing to see, because they're like huge and
yeah.
they're so graceful, right?
Wow.
And so I think you might be in good company. So come on, and we'll be working with you.
Hey, man, you're putting out the invitation. Don't be surprised now. Don't be surprised.
I won't be teaching the class, so that's why I'm saying come on.
Oh!
As a matter of fact, a young person would probably be teaching.
I love it.
Because I got to give them the opportunity to teach as well, right? Like, they've learned, they've been able
right.
to train, and so I give them that opportunity.
Now it's time to put that tutelage into practice.
Absolutely, so I can sit down, because my bones are hurting.
Love it.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. We may have to bring you back, because I feel like there's so much more to cover. We want to keep staying in touch with you to see how your programs are progressing, hear about your new books that are coming out. So tell people again the name of your books, and then also just your website one more time so they have that information.
Absolutely. Two books, Freedom's Design, 20 Days of Empowering Black Kings, and I Am My History. And both of those books can be found on briankeithharris.com. There are also some other resources on the website as well for educators who want to extend the learning beyond both of the books and also want to focus on mindfulness in the classroom. And all of those things can be found again at briankeithharris.com.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. We thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed you. We're going to leave the show there. Thank you guys for coming back and joining this episode. We hope you enjoyed it as much as Kay and I did. We'll be back with more episodes. And if you want to subscribe today. If you want to subscribe to future episodes, please go to the Anchor app, iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and other platforms where you can find the Bed Talks podcast. And until next time, XOXO. All I know is get this mother paper. Doubt you not try one of us. If they do, I'm a bullet. Please don't reach no chain.